Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America. Of course, you'll find us online at thisweekinamerica.us. In a study of the Old Testament, apostasy can lead a nation to self-destruct. Will America mend its ways and return to God? Author Philip Wittig recognized events that led to God rendering his righteous judgment against ancient Israel. He saw similar events occurring in the United States that led him to ask the question, will these events also lead God to declare his righteous judgment against the United States? His goal is to help the reader connect the dots, understand and respond to this extremely important issue of saving America. Philip Wittig, author of Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct, Will America Mend Its Ways and Return to God, is back with us on This Week in America. Philip, welcome back to the program. It's always a pleasure. Great to have you back with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to have a chance to visit with you and to share things with our listeners.
Well, and you do such an excellent job of explaining this and allowing us to connect the dots, and that's what we're going to do a little bit further on today's program. Before we get started, just a little bit of background on you. Would you share with the listeners of the program the story of your life as a child, let's say up through elementary school?
Okay. I grew up in Sheridan County, Nebraska, farm country in the Panhandle. Our home was about 20 miles from the nearest town. I was the oldest of three siblings, a sister and a brother, both now deceased. I have great memories of family mealtime as we all gathered around the table, asked God's blessing on our food, and at the end of the meal, we thanked him for the food we had eaten. Each morning after breakfast, my father, a hard-working farmer rancher, would lead the family in daily devotions. I became acquainted with biblical history, and to this day, I can recall many important biblical events that were delivered in those morning devotions. I began my elementary education as a first grader in a one-room country school 3 miles from our home. It was in a fenced-in area in the middle of a pasture. There were 9 to 10 students in the school, and we got our well water from the well that provided water for the cattle that grazed in the pasture surrounding the school. When I was in the fifth grade, my parents bought a farm that was closer to town. There I attended a two-room rural school. There were 30 students with one teacher teaching all 8 grades. The following year, there were 2 teachers, each teaching 4 grades, and I graduated from 8th grade at this school. But I dare not ignore my elementary education and my Christian faith that occurred during these years. I remember my mother sitting with me to memorize the Ten Commandments, the Apostles' Creed, and the Lord's Prayer. That memorization included the meaning of each. I attended Sunday school nearly every Sunday, after which we as a family attended worship service at rural Emmanuel Lutheran Church.
You know, it's interesting the foundation that you have, and you covered the elementary school. What was secondary and post-secondary education? What were those years like for you?
In 1948, I began my high school education at Gordon High School. During the week, I stayed in town with my maternal grandmother because winter weather in the Nebraska Panhandle was unpredictable and the country roads were often impassable after snowstorms. Many of the boys from farm and ranch families enrolled in the agricultural program offered by the school. I was no exception. I graduated as a salutatorian from high school in 1952. In September 1952, I matriculated to Dana College at Blair, Nebraska. Dana was a Lutheran liberal arts college, and I enrolled in the pre-engineering curriculum. However, in my second year, I enrolled in the business administration curriculum. I graduated in 1956 with a Bachelor of Science degree in business administration. Upon graduation, I applied for Navy OCS, or Officer Candidate School, at Newport, Rhode Island, and was accepted for the class beginning in October 56. In OCS, I came to appreciate the knowledge I had acquired in those pre-engineering courses at Dana.
With us on the program is Philip Wittig, that's W-I-T-T-I-G, author of the book Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct, Will America Mend Its Ways and Return to God? Books available wherever books are sold. You'll find information and be able to order the book at his website. That's P. Wittig, W-I-T-T-I-G.com. If you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, you can link on directly to Philip's website. Talk a little bit more about your experience in the Navy and what an impact that had on your life and in shaping who you are today.
Well, I was an OCS. We marched everywhere we went. This was a new experience for this kid from Nebraska Panhandle.
I can imagine.
At Morning Colors, we also had a personnel inspection, proper uniform, and shine shoes. Then we marched to our classes. After study hall, each evening, one company on a rotating basis stood guard duty on the base. Upon graduation at the end of February 1957, we were commissioned ensigns in the United States Navy. Prior to my duty assignment aboard ship, I had orders to attend damage control and firefighting school. I learned the importance of maintaining the watertight integrity to protect the stability designed in the Navy ships. I also learned how to fight dangerous shipboard fires. In April 1957, I reported for duty on the USS Aldebaran, a refrigerated store ship. Its mission was to transport food from Norfolk, Virginia to the Mediterranean Sea for distribution to the 100-plus Navy ships operating there. I learned about the importance and effectiveness of replenishing the food supplies of our Navy fighting ships while underway at sea. I also learned the importance of proper maintenance of the ship's exterior hull. In July 1958, I was transferred to shore duty with the Naval Reserve Fleet in Orange, Texas. Some 200 ships at this location had been inactivated and mothballed to be reactivated in the event of a national emergency. Here I served as M Division officer with a crew of about 40 men. We were responsible for maintenance and repair of the dehumidification machines aboard each ship. In addition, we were responsible for the upkeep of the engineering records of each ship. I was released from active duty in February of 1960 and assigned to a shipboard reserve unit of a destroyer. That was recalled to active service for 1 year in October 61. After undergoing some repairs, the ship was assigned to a destroyer squadron operating in the Mediterranean Sea. During this time, I qualified as officer of the deck for operations at sea. This was an important qualification for me as a Navy line officer.
What was it like adjusting to civilian life after you went through this career that you just talked about in the military? What was it like getting back into civilian life at that time?
Well, finally, in October 1962, I returned to civilian life in Nebraska to help my parents with the farming and ranching while my brother completed his time in the military as he intended to take over the farm or ranch. In 1964, I began taking some graduate-level business courses at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. In 1966, I was employed as the accountant at ISCO, Inc., a fledgling instrument manufacturer in Lincoln with about 30 employees and less than $1 million in sales. I performed the accounting duties and started the data processing function by learning how to program the newly acquired accounting machine. I later utilized my Navy experience as a construction supervisor for the company's first building expansion. As the company continued to grow, I hired a computer programmer and another accountant. We were able to computerize the inventory control areas of the business, and I assumed additional financial responsibilities. In the 1970s, we installed a sophisticated computerized production inventory control and purchasing system that reduced cost and helped the company become financially stable. Risco became a public company in 1985 with its stock traded on the NASDAQ. This forced me to become better and significantly more proficient writer because I was now responsible for writing the company's quarterly and annual reports required by the SEC. By the time I retired in 2001, ISCO had about 380 employees and about $60 million in annual sales.
That's amazing. And those writing skills you'll see firsthand in Philip's book, Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct. Will America Mend Its Ways and Return to God? Now that we've established the background, we know your foundation, religious foundation, foundation in the civilian life as well. What was your spiritual journey like during those adult years?
Well, as I was in the Navy, I attended Protestant services whenever a chaplain was aboard the ship. On shore duty, I worshipped regularly at the base chapel or at one of the Lutheran churches near the base. After I returned to civilian life, I worshipped regularly in a Lutheran church. I became a member of Sheridan Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska in 1968. I met Karen, my wife, at Sheridan Lutheran Church, where we were married in 1973. I have facilitated the Sunday morning men's Bible study since 2004 here at Sheridan. I did not regularly read the Bible until after about 50 years old. I then began reading the Bible nearly every day. It took me a couple of years to read the entire Bible. I then selected a book of the Bible and writing notes of a text I had studied. I experienced some financial adversity after I retired and came to realize that God was guiding me in a different direction. I continued my daily Bible study. However, in late 2008, I began writing down my observations of the text and also recording its implications for me. By this time, the historical story of ancient Israel had become very interesting to me. I began to recognize that ancient Israel was on a path of geopolitical decline that eventually led to its demise. Then, as I studied the prophetic books of the Old Testament, I discovered that apostasy had led it to its decline. Even though ancient Israel and its people from the time of its founding had been dedicated and consecrated to Almighty God, as a nation it had abandoned honoring God's commandments and failed to recognize Him as its protector. It defiantly rejected His pleas to return to Him. Eventually, God reluctantly executed His righteous judgment on the defiant ancient Israel by allowing the evil Assyrians to destroy it and disperse its people.
You know, it's interesting, your enlightenment as you're reading. When do you decide to write the book and share this message that you were able to ascertain with others? What was the inspiration for writing this book?
Well, I knew that America had been a Christian nation. I also recognized that America was in a similar state of moral decline as was ancient Israel before its demise. The question that troubled me was, how long would it be before God executed His righteous judgment against the United States? As I contemplated America's situation, I suspected that there was a close connection between the story of ancient Israel and America's story, but was unable to recognize the connection. During my reading of Jonathan Cahn's book, The Harbinger, I came to recognize the fact that America was on the same road of apostasy as ancient Israel had traveled about 3,000 years earlier. This knowledge inspired me to write the book in a comparative format to help a reader recognize that history indeed was repeating itself today with the story of ancient Israel 30 centuries earlier, and it was comparison to be taken seriously. I truly believe God really assisted me in the writing of this book. That is why many times I say our book, to recognize the value of His assistance in that task.
What is the benefit, do you think, for a nation and its people to be consecrated and to be dedicated to God?
Well, it's important to recognize that God is the creator of the universe and everything in it. He is also an omnipotent God. It's important to recognize He created everything, and therefore He has a right to do anything He wishes with what He created. It is His expectation that human beings consecrated and dedicated to Him obey His commands and worship only Him. Probably one of the most important benefits is the mighty hedge of protection He places around that nation. When one studies the 40 years of Israel's travel from Egypt to Promised Land, the existence of His hedge of protection becomes apparent. During their journey in the wilderness, the Israelites encountered only one real challenge, which they overcame in one day. The hedge of protection also surrounded the Israelites during their conquest of the Promised Land. With respect to America, it's apparent God's hedge of protection encompassed America during the Revolutionary War of Independence. God protected and prospered America from the time the colonists arrived at the shores of North America through the end of the Second World War as the victor. In addition, God had so richly blessed America that it had become the most powerful and wealthy nation on earth. Unfortunately, in the 1950s, Satan began tempting the people to believe that they didn't need God anymore. Then, in a period of about 10 years, America had begun its journey down the road of apostasy to self-destruction.
With us on the program is Philip Wittig. That's W-I-T-T-I-G. His book, Apostasy, Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct. Will America Mend Its Ways and Return to God? What does it mean that human beings are created in the image of God?
Well, I touched on this issue briefly in the previous interview.
Yes.
But I want to begin by citing from the creation story in Genesis 1, verses 26 and 27. And then God said, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness." So God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created male and female. He created them. End of quote. God has two important characteristics. He is a spirit and He is eternal. Therefore, as we read in Genesis, every human being, male and female, has a soul or spirit. After each person's physical death, because each person's soul is eternal, it will continue to exist for eternity, either in heaven or hell. As I pondered the meaning of a human being created in God's image, I came to believe that every human being takes on the image of God at conception, and that is why God is so jealously protective of human life. That is why He considers abortion to be one of the most, be such an abominable procedure. I sense God grieves for the 60 million or more unborn babies murdered in America since Roe v. Wade. God is grieving because not one of those babies ever had the opportunity to grow up and live out the plan He had for each one of them.
With us on the program, and a minute or so left, is Philip Wittig. His book is Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct. Will America Bend Its Ways and Return to God? Not a lot of time, but I know one topic that's very important to you is about the root cause of pluralism in America. In a couple of minutes, talk about that. What is the root cause?
Well, during the last half of the 20th century, America had become very pluralistic nation or society. In order to be politically correct, one had to accept the premise that all gods have equal standing. It appears that many politicians and news commentators accepted that premise. I would challenge that premise with the fact that I said above, it was Almighty God who brought America through World War II as a victor and to the pinnacle of its world leadership and power. I believe no other God was even in the least bit capable of performing such a feat. As I look at the last half of the 20th century, I see probably two root causes for the growth of pluralism. First, America's growing and deepening apostasy had led to a widespread idolatry. And second, should I finish this?
Yes, go ahead, the second.
The second, the image of various foreign nationals brought with them their own non-Christian beliefs and religions.
You know, there's so much information in the book. The book is Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct. Will America Mend Its Ways and Return to God? Also at Philip's website. Now, the author is Philip Wittig. That's W-I-T-T-I-G. His website is pwittig.com. Book's available, of course, at Amazon. If you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, you'll be able to link on directly to Philip's website. Philip, the time always goes by too quickly. Fascinating, eye-opening program once again. Thank you so much for spending time with us on the program once again today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, because I enjoy sharing this message.
Well, and it's an important message, and we appreciate you taking the time to do so. The book written by our guest in the program, Philip Wittig, once again, is Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct. Will America Mend Its Ways and Return to God? You'll find that book available at Philip's website. You can link on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.